Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a long-standing journalist of food, health, and the environment, public policy, science, and advocacy. And each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between our personal, family, community, and social well-being and all that's going on in our world. So each week on Connect the Dots, over the last 6 or 7 years, I've been talking with terrific advocates, thought leaders, scientists, experts, artists, filmmakers, and people all across the board who are doing different things and involved in different facets of our world to protect the earth, protect our well-being and health, and be awake, aware, engaged, and motivated to participate in all the things we need to do, for ourselves as individuals, but more importantly, for ourselves as communities, as, participants in an interconnected planet. And this week on the show, I'm really, really thrilled to have as our guest Rachel Marco Havens. Rachel is a multi-platform solutionary artist, performer, creative entrepreneur, and community organizer. Wow, what a great combination. She works primarily with energy transformation, has a strong focus on women's leadership, youth empowerment, and bridging intergenerational connections. You know, that is a constant theme on this show. The latter especially, because, you know, there's misunderstanding now between the generations where there needs to be heart connection, support, cooperation and collaboration going in all directions. I'm a great believer in that. Rachel seeks to close the gaps in social, environmental, and spiritual justice movements. She works with grassroots organizations to protect the waters of the Hudson Valley and beyond, is on the board of directors for the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, the Youth Engagement Director for Earth Guardians, and a co-director of the New York chapter fostering the expansion of young leaders. As a prelude to letting listeners know how we first connected, which is a background to Rachel's appearance joining us today, as well as an intro to what she's most recently been up to, I was at a small press conference rally in front of the office of Senator Charles Schumer in one of many efforts made by a number of dedicated groups over the last several years to persuade the senator and Senator Gillibrand to take more strenuous efforts to address the incredible life and environmental threat of the so-called AIM pipeline, which is a high-gauge fracking pipeline that is slated to actually travel within the supposedly secure borders of the Indian Point nuclear power plant north of New York City by mere 25 miles. And, you know, if you've never heard of a potentially explosive gas pipeline going through nuclear power plant before, well, not really a good idea, but, you know, especially in an aging and decaying power plant. So we've been covering that on Alternet and Tom Dispatch and elsewhere, myself, Ellen Cantoro, and other, you know, journalists. And this was a protest. I met Rachel there when she made the signature statement. The AIM pipeline is actually, you know, the kind of acronym for the Algonquin Incremental Pipeline. And Rachel, fellow activists, colleagues, shortly thereafter had a brief conversation, never followed up and really talked much by phone because Rachel was on her way to Standing Rock to support the Dakota Access Pipeline Protection Zone. And I feel so lucky and thrilled to be talking to her today, and very grateful for all of us to both that she went and also to hear about her trip, her experiences, her shared insights through that time spent at Standing Rock. So it's so great. So, you know, met you, Rachel, as you were about to depart, talking to you now as you have returned to share you know, your experiences and the wisdom that came from them here with our listeners. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Rachel Marco Havens.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. You cut out a little bit right at the end of discussing the
Develop what your findings were. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we can do, that's what we're talking about here today for the whole show. So I thought rather than foreshadow it, I would let you, you know, put that out to people. Yeah.
Awesome. So I'm not sure if I didn't hear you or if everyone didn't hear you, but I will. I'll background a little bit on that. I started doing this work, sort of getting my buns off the cushion, because I spent most of my early years doing more self-introspection and personal work versus, you know, community organizing and getting kind of out there in the ring. I guess I was a little, I don't know, I kind of felt like, well, maybe I'll just pray for them and they can do the frontline work. But I was always really fascinated by the idea of energy and spiritual, if you want to call it that, connectivity, and then direct action, because I have this sort of belief that that we draw what we focus on, and so, and that the more we push against systems, the bigger they become and the harder the hurdle becomes. So I kind of stayed away from this kind of work. I never marched on Washington. I never carried a picket sign. And I had friends who were, you know, really, really active in the movement. And I'd question them. I go, where do you see your results? If you, all you do is look at bad news, that's just crazy. How are you changing the world? You know, like I kind of, and maybe even felt, was a little jaded thinking that I had a better plan, which was of course completely floored when I, when a bottling company came to Woodstock looking for 1.75 million gallons of water per day out of a tiny, teeny little lake. And I went, nope, you're standing up because you know what happens. If you know, this is a big one. You're going to stand up and you're going to support whatever efforts. And I connected with these incredible women in Kingston who came together basically around a kitchen table and went at it. And went at it from an angle of policy, civic engagement, and governmental transparency. And I thought, oh, this will work. We're going to play. We're going to beat them at their own game, which we did. And after about 5.5 months, we sent Niagara Bottling Company away. And as I was looking, I was going, well, this is a bigger issue here than just our tiny lake and the stream and the Hudson and the wetlands. And like every time I looked, the picture got bigger. And I started to look out into the surrounding areas and went, oh, you know, you may be, you know, praying for this work, but you have to do some more. And so I started to look, and somehow I saw this Algonquin pipeline. So what is the Algonquin? First of all, how dare you call a pipeline Algonquin? Because there's nothing Algonquin about a 42-inch fracked gas high pressure pipeline. And there's definitely nothing Algonquin about it going 105 feet away from critical safety infrastructure at Indian Point, quote unquote. And so I'm going, Algonquin, Indian, like, where are these names coming from? And then again, you look out a little wider and you see the Pilgrim pipeline, the Algonquin pipeline, the Dominion pipeline, the Constitution pipeline. I was horrified because, to me, the concept of it sounded like the creepiest semantic feng shui I'd ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
Because, mm-hmm. come on, man, what are you trying to tell us? What's the mm-hmm. message here? Pilgrim, Algonquin, Dominion, Constitution. Like, I was like, I'm going to write a song. I'm going to do, all, you know, like, it's been bugging me. But I had plunged into
Let me just interject for a second. Just, you know, how do you interpret the message? What is the message of kind of taking over those names and then giving them back to us in the form of something that is carrying dirty fossil fuels that is, you know, that will contaminate communities and accelerate climate change? What is the message of using all of those words, in your opinion?
The message to me is mm-hmm. We are going to continue colonizing every mm-hmm. single aspect of health and well-being of the people on this planet. That mm-hmm. we don't have we're not stopping. We don't care. We want to mm-hmm. let everybody know. And we'd love to instill that sort of the cellular memory or that knowing that the pilgrims came, they expressed dominion, they ravaged communities, and then they wrote their constitution, which was our constitution or the native constitution, in fossil fuels. That's what they're going to do now. Mm-hmm. And what's happening in the last year is that mm-hmm. so the constitution was stopped due to the 401 water permits were denied. And that mm-hmm. was like well into the process of their laying this pipeline. So now that pipeline itself is in under appeals, right? So they are making an appeal to continue the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when and if they do win, if they win that appeal, the rest of us have absolutely we're done. We can't continue fighting these pipelines because that's a precedent setting appeal. So again, here we go with the Constitution, with all of that feng shui. If they win that, then basically they've written themselves in to do whatever they want. And we mm-hmm. have to wake up and we all have to start looking. And so I focus right now quite a bit of my attention on the Spectre Project, which is called the Algonquin, simply because that's, you know, this kind of work, you kind of like, you meet your community, you feel the people that you work well with, and then you go.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. and I met Susan Van Dolsen and Courtney Williams right after or while I was working on this water fight here. I never mm-hmm. want to call it a fight, but while I was working on scoping this project here, I met them, and at that time, it was only, I guess it was the winter of 2014, 2015. They were like, where's everybody? Where is everybody? Because this is big here. We're talking about mm-hmm. nuclear destruction, 20 million people in the near vicinity. So I jumped in and said, okay, what can I do? How can I help? What can I do? And progressively, I find myself driving down to Peekskill more often than I ever have. Mm-hmm. just to support because it's frightening to me that people aren't paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. Well, that's a terrific, I love what you said, about, you know, this incredible, contamination of the principles of the Constitution and, you know, diverting those principles through changing agreements that we have in government down, you know, other byways that are not really supporting health and life on the planet, you know, and are both humans and all species. And, you know, it's interesting that we both come to this from the more individually focused direction and then have this experience of for all of us to live in the healthy, sane, and balanced individual pathway, we need, you know, that way and all of the ways protected here on Earth. And if the threats are not coming from within myself, they may be coming from traits within myself that are then reflected in other people who have different values and are organized and taking action in certain ways. And it behooves us with different and more caring values to organize and participate so that we're not overtaken and overwhelmed by them. But segueing to your recent journey, here we have one pipeline, and now we have another pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline. So how were you called to travel from the East Coast? And I know people, you know, Native peoples have come from all over the continent, actually, not just from this country, but all over the continent. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, within this continent, from the East Coast is a longer journey, probably, than from anywhere else, and so how were you called to go attend? And please, you know, also describe for our listeners, the event that's going on there, because I'm certainly aware of it and on Facebook about it all the time, networked with others, but it isn't so much a media topic, certainly not much of a mainstream media topic, although that may have shifted a little bit. And it's not something that I have had the opportunity to report on very much on this program, because I felt that people who were directly connected to it needed to be, bearing witness, as you are doing today, which I have hoped for and so I'm really delighted that you are here and this is happening. But I didn't want to just get on as a white person and talk about this secondhand, because that really isn't bringing anything to the table very much, although I'll support as much as possible. So please, if you would orient for our listeners what the Dakota Access Pipeline is and what's going on there now and how you felt called to go participate.
Sure. So, and that feeling that you have is a special one, I believe, actually, because I guess as I explain, it'll make a little more sense, or it already makes sense to you. So I started working after we cleared the bottling company. I started alongside a 23-year-old, at the time 21-year-old friend who I met doing that work. We started an Earth Guardians chapter here in New York, in Woodstock. Mm-hmm. And Earth Guardians is really quickly, to quickly express it, it's a growing organization led by youth to focus intergenerational organization, led by youth to focus on the earth, air, water, and climate and the protection thereof for future generations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an awesome organization, and kids are popping up all over the world, joining and starting crews and supporting each other in this work. So I started to look, and as friends of mine prior to that I was working on with the water, one of my friends says, "You always were thinking about the youth," and I don't even remember that. It's sort of like this natural thing, excuse me, that I, as a mother, I guess, I think, we got to take care of our kids. So in doing this, like, I'm always on the lookout for awesome young leaders, they just find me or something. And so last spring, I saw a website that said Respect Our Water, and it was about the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I thought, here we go again with the Dakota Access. What are you saying here? You're going to come and plow through these people? You're going to use your access, your eminent domain, to plow this community. So it was the campaign was young school children calling for the stop of the Dakota Access Pipeline because it threatens their water. And this is the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, the Sioux Reservation.
in North Dakota. And I thought, wow, these kids. And they had like a video, each kid explaining, talk about who they were, where they came from, what their, why they didn't think this was a good idea. And so I started to promote that through Earth Guardians, through my work, just to let people know, like, do you know about this Dakota Access Pipeline? In the meantime, Winona LaDuke, who is one of our Wisdom Council members for Earth Guardians, was furiously fighting the Sandpiper Pipeline, which was in Wisconsin, and it was slated to go through a similar pipeline, going to go right through two of their wild rice fields, their lakes. They're just going to plow right through this reservation's food source. And she was working very hard to stop that, and I didn't catch that till the very end, but she did get them out of her rice fields. As soon as that pipeline stopped, Enbridge, who was a company that was trying to push this pipeline, joined the Dakota Access Pipeline, and they bought into a company that has a third of a stake in the pipeline. So I'm watching this whole thing here. I'm going, why are they going for these native communities? And then if we hear, as we're trying to fight these pipelines, the Algonquin and the Pilgrim, like these are going through, they're not simply direct hits on people of color, indigenous communities, which most, I said, that must be happening way more than we even realize, because we're not getting far here. And this is going right through, you know, white neighborhoods, wealthy white neighborhoods. And if those people aren't able to stop these pipelines, what's happening in the native communities? Because they have way less power, right? Less, they're more oppressed. They've got maybe more power, more oppressed. And so I started to go, and I said to my friend this summer, I said, I want to go to like every, or call like every nation together and get a story from them about what's happening to their communities. Because suddenly I have this feeling that these indigenous communities, why haven't I been paying attention? Again, once you start looking, you just start to trip over more and more and more and more and more destruction and more colonization. And so I ended up, I was watching, paying attention to these kids. I was signing what I could and calling where I could, overwhelmed here by, the Crestwood gas storage up in Seneca Lake, all these pipelines. Now they want to put anchorages for long-term crude storage on the Hudson River. Like, I was like, oh, my God, you just can't, you're like swirling. And then I saw that the kids were running to D.C., that the Standing Rock Sioux kids, along with other tribes, kids from other tribes, from the Rosebud Reservation, from Pine Ridge, that there were people running to D.C. And my first connection with Native tradition was in the Long Walk in 1978. Came through, they passed through Woodstock, and so I remember that, and it stirred up this thing in me, and I was like, I have to support these kids. I'm going to D.C. Who's getting in the car? No one. And I couldn't go, I had to work, but I heard that they were returning, and on their way home they were going to Manhattan. So I went down to the city, and these kids were so tired. They had just run like 2,800 miles, and they were standing there in the middle of Union Square, and they said, we run for our life and for our water and for our futures. And one particular voice shot up out of that crowd and went and put chills down my spine. And I said, who's that? And I just kept, oh, okay, that's somebody, whatever. She was awesome, though. Like, that girl's awesome. Mm-hmm. They were all awesome. But this one's like, there's something going on there. So so as they got back home, everybody started, they landed back at Standing Rock, which was in April 1st, before these kids ran, and this is where they ran from, Sacred Stone Camp. It was called Sacred Stone Camp, and basically an encampment of people went up
to prepare, hold space, and be ready to stop this pipeline from going across their river. Now, the Dakota Access Pipeline is basically the Keystone XL 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think it's like 70 miles shorter. Like, it's really the same pipeline concept. And it's coming out of the
Let me just interject and say that, yeah, the way that goes with these pipelines is that they use the kind of appropriating names that you're talking about, Rachel, and they build them in segments. So therefore, the land is connected, the waterways are connected, and the pipelines are connected. But they give the appearance of disconnection and disconnect the communities that would unite together to protect their water, earth, land, and, you know, air and everything, and their food supply. They disconnect them through building them in segments and giving them these fancy names. So each community is there on their own, you know, fighting, trying to organize, trying to get national attention. Every one of these heinous stories is viewed merely as a local story, when in fact it's a national story, it's a global story. You know, we know globally that, for example, if the TPP passes, there'll be this kind of pipeline and dirty extraction activity will be magnified exponentially all over the globe, with horrible impacts in terms of pollution, contamination, destruction of wildlife, just, you know, theft of people's communities, and again, accelerated climate change. All of that will be running rampant. But, you know, just because of the individual focus that we all tend to come from, that we're wired to come from, so no blame or judgment about that, and that both Rachel and I came from, you know, first it's an individual saying, what can I do at home about this? Which, you know, the answer is join forces with others and, you know, to protect your home and community. And then the next thing is communities are left alone defending themselves. And in this case, you know, it's all part of a bigger plan. That doesn't make it a conspiracy. It makes it part of business planning. And so, you know, what to me is very unique about this Standing Rock is that, and, you know, the show title being here, Connect the Dots, we're at last allowed to connect the dots and see where this is all leading. So, you know, it's all leading down to a Koch Brothers refinery, you know, in Texas, which then is for a lot of fossil fuel products that would mostly be exported abroad to profit the corporations who are part of all of this, and businesses and industries that are part of all of this, while really denuding and stripping American natural world, our communities, our ability to have healthy food, all of that is just a sacrifice zone. And the fascinating thing to me about this is that, you know, for most Americans, white or of other, you know, ethnicities, you know, it's kind of a bit of a, and I first encountered this as the first news cycle reporter to report on fracking. When fracking was coming through poorer regions of upstate New York and Pennsylvania. And it was a big shockaroony for white communities to discover that they had now become the sacrifice communities. That it was like, what? Mm-hmm. Where are our elected officials? Where is the government protecting us? Where are the laws protecting us, et cetera? You know, but the thing that's so unique about the Standing Rock event and pipeline is that in targeting native populations, these companies and the government acting in collusion are targeting communities that are very familiar with this way of treating people, who have a you know, a historic experience, you know, of both sustaining this damage and of sharing in community around it. And so when Native communities see this happening, they're not caught off guard with people going, well, this couldn't be happening to us.
They're not caught off guard, but it's very lonely. And that's one of the things that you just pointed out, that is the reason why. So, you know, and so the TPP, the thing that's the most frightening about the TPP is that
we're basically going to have no rights to regulate our greenhouse emissions, our environmental protections. That will go out the window, because it's basically giving corporations the opportunity to just sue the hell out of whoever they want if they can't do what they want to do. That's like one of the things about the TPP that freaks me out. Just a tiny piece of the frightening.
I totally agree.
Horrible,
with you. Yeah.
Right? So
and accurate.
So
totally
when
accurate.
I was working, right? So when I was working with the water here in Woodstock, that was something that, and I feel like this is something to share with people who are listening and who are going, gosh, how do they even know about all this stuff? It's so exhausting. I couldn't even keep track, you know, because you can't. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing. They want to make sure that we are so off balance. And so for us in this community, when they came for the water, they came because the water was in one municipality, 15 miles away, a 6-member board handled the control of that water. Next door to that was the town who was trying to broker the water, and next door to that, and it was just totally like a mess. And they're like, oh, we're going in there. We can shift this in here before those hippies over in Woodstock figure it out. But that's where the water was coming from. And somebody in Kingston figured it out. And so off the list, right? But I'll tell you, it's an extremely lonely place, this work. It's you called it. You're like standing there on an island going like, here I am with my tiny little sign. Can somebody hear me? They want to put a 42-inch frack gas pipeline next to a nuclear power plant. Why isn't everybody standing here? Like, and then you're like, yes, and then it's just us in our community. So this and the thing that I learned was that I think is one of our biggest is this segmented action that you brought up, because the Algonquin pipeline, the Spectra project, it's Algonquin till it gets to Yorktown Heights, and then it's the Atlantic Bridge, and then it's the Northeast Direct or something. Like, we don't even know it's going through 5 states for export, and we're separated. And this is what's happening with the entire movement as well. So as I, again, as you open your eyes and you start to look at this work, you go, oh, wait. They put, and like you're saying, all the rich people are going, why is it in our yard? Call the senator. Because normally they put it in the brownest neighborhood they can find, right?
Yeah,
whatever it may be, whether it's the, you know, all of the sewage treatment for New York City and the 5 boroughs or this, right? Where is it? In the Upper West Side? No, it's in Harlem. There's a reason, because right? So now we're at this place, and I think when you look at what's happening with Standing Rock, so what happened was these kids called, they ran to D.C. and stood outside Obama's door going, are you going to hear us or what? And when they got back to Sacred Stone Camp, it had gone from a little encampment. There was 1,000 people there. The camp had opened up, and they got back. They were like, whoa, oh, my God, what's going on? And it just grew. And what happened was that the community said, you are not coming on this doesn't go on their land. It goes it goes like 2 miles away or a mile away, but it crosses between their water intake and the community.
Come in. Oh boy, about a big disconnection there, huh? Oh boy.
Yeah.
Disconnecting people from their water. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's not on their land technically. It's in through their water, okay? So the kids are going, I can't drink oil. I can't drink oil. And then everybody else is going, oh, well, we can't. And so it starts to build, and this is now built. Now, that was in, gosh, I think it was June or July that they ran. It was July. Now, in October, there are an average of about 2,000 people on that property and a continuing rota of tribal nations, representatives coming through, community members, to support Standing Rock, who's called out to the world and said, please come and stand with us. And it's all proverbial. And I keep going, what's in a name, people? What's in a name? So one of the things that I saw, you know,
When I, for me, I want to write a
standing
book.
Standing
like,
rock
is in just the name.
Standing rock.
Right?
Yeah, wow.
So
wow.
Standing,
yeah,
it's all
that's
across
beautiful.
The board. Mm-hmm. It's across the board, right? So here, mm-hmm. one of the things that's very tricky is that Algonquin incremental market. Okay, first of all, they're telling you that they're going to segment this action. And that's one of the things I learned about. Same thing in Woodstock here. When they applied for the permit for the water bottling company to come into town, mm-hmm. they applied for the permit for a bottling plant, but they didn't mm-hmm. state the source of the water. So when mm-hmm. the proposal went into the DEC, they said, oh, we're good. You guys handle that. The guy who's trying to broker 1.75 million gallons a day from another town's community, their watershed, mm-hmm. he's going to be mm-hmm. the lead agent in the environmental risk assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. it's in his community. Well, the only mm-hmm. thing in his community, in his municipality, was the actual plant. Everything mm-hmm. else, the damage, the he had one thing, which is a wetland, because they're trying to build it in a wetland. But everything else, the mm-hmm. thousands of gallons of waste, was all going to different communities. And that's where I first heard the word segmented action. And that's what all mm. of these pipelines are doing. And the Spectra mm. is right there. They're like, boom, oh, we're calling it the incremental market. We're going to do it in increments. Mm. We're going to go from mm-hmm. Pennsylvania to Rhode Island through Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and then we're going to export it. But we're going to do it in increments.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to separate all of these communities along the path. Well, that's what's happening down here, happening in Dakota Access land, right, is that mm-hmm. they're going town to town, municipality to municipality, crossing different – there's actually other tribes who are standing with Standing Rock because they're on the line too. Their sacred mm-hmm. sites are so here we go, and we're going into this proverbially when I Algonquin incremental market. What is that stand? What is that aim?
Mm-hmm.
Aim.
That's it.
As in the American Indian Movement aim. Mm. Aim mm. pipeline. Mm. The aim mm. pipeline. Like so. What to me, I started going, oh, you see, so they don't even know what they're doing with their semantic feng shui. Because if you're going to mm-hmm. call AIM into the mix, you're going to call the resistance unlike any you've ever seen before in this country.
Oh, I love
you're doing
this.
It
well.
Yourself, okay? You people have done this already yourselves. You're doing it. So now, switch back over to the Dakota Access, right? So the Sandpiper uh-huh. was killed. The Dakota Access, or is it's kind of like, I think it's like the Constitution. They're going to keep trying because they already laid most of it, so they're appealing. But the Dakota Access now, it's coming through. And so now this Native community, a very right in the heart of the continent of Turtle Island here, mm-hmm. is under siege. And everybody says, you know what, we're coming in. And do you know why? The only reason, I don't think the only reason, I think a major reason, as I went to this land, the closer I got to the property, the more humble I got, and the more I questioned why I was walking away from my own community. Because mm-hmm. as I was driving in to Standing Rock to help stop a pipeline that was going underneath the river and threatening the water source mm-hmm. of Native people. At home, the Algonquin AIM pipeline is trying to go under the Hudson River. They had just blasted 24/7, 24 hours a day for all of Labor Day weekend. So I'm going, what the heck am I doing here? Like, why am I doing this? But I realized every single community that came, every person who came from particularly a tribal nation was coming from a front line of their own. They understood. We all understand what it feels like to be under siege.
Mm-hmm.
And all mm-hmm. of these traditions, the people who grew up in Native communities on reservation, mm-hmm. they recognize that this pipelines, there's more pipelines. And so when I stood there in the middle of this thing and I'm going, oh, I'm going to interview everybody, find out what everybody's, who's, what's got, no, dude, I stood there and I went, oh, We're all on a front line. Every one of us is on a front line. More people recognize it than other people. But this is an issue here. And the pipeline, it's more than this one black snake. So there's a prophecy that says there's a black snake that's going to come down through. It's going to come into our communities, and it's going to have potential possibility for good, but it's basically all really bad. It's going to take down, it's going to take us down. But we're also going to come together, and we're going to kill that black snake if we can. Right. But the communities are going to come together. You know, there's prophecies all around nations coming together, all the nations, the tribal nations, the communities of every color, creed, everyone will come together. We're going to deal with this. And when you look at the Hopi prophecies, prophesize quite a bit of doom and destruction. If we go the route we've been going, it's going to look like this. Like, it's almost like hardly a prophecy. It's just like clear paper. It's like, here's the plan. If you do that, it's happened. Real simple.
Mm-hmm.
But
it
all depends on the mindset of the people on the planet at the time. And this is something that I think is really important, because the Hopis are very revered as kind of the most spiritual of everybody. And they say very clearly, this is all dependent on where people's heads are at and our hearts are at the time.
Yeah.
So here we are, and what's happening now is people are coming from all over the world. Now, Dakota Access went in as soon as they announced that they, as soon as they revealed, you know, announced that there was a sacred site close to the property at Cannonball Ranch. Dakota Access went in the next day and dug it up. They went away from all of their... They went away from all of what they were doing several miles away. They hadn't been this close, and they came in with dogs. And everybody, most people, this is the first time they started hearing about the Dakota Access, was when they brought, like, Blackwater, you know, they brought dogs in there that were highly trained, you know, with owners, with the handlers that actually really didn't know what to do with them. And they basically were testing. Okay, these people say they're going to fight us. How far are they willing to go? Let's bring in some dogs. And the people said, children, said, what, are you going to come after me? You mentioned it. These people are familiar with colonization. They know their beliefs. They know what colonization feels like. American, white American, average Americans, we don't know what colonization feels like because we haven't been paying attention. So we already, we've been like over, we've been colonized as part of the colonizers without even realizing. We're not even looking. John Trudell did a piece long time ago. The first one I heard version of this speech called "We Are Power" was at the Black Hills in like 1978, and he said in that piece, he says when you look out into the white man's world, those people are powerless. Those people feel powerless, but they're not oppressed. When you come into our Indian country, we know we have power, but we're oppressed. And I choose the latter.
Wow, that is so amazing. That is really incredible. What a profound understanding. You know, if we let that sink in, it's so interesting. So, you know, I mean, we could do, Rachel, you and I could do a whole show and conversation just on what you just said. And this is, I mean, because, you know, speaking from the privileged white side, we have all these goodies, we have all these benefits, but we kind of have to trust in these forces that are running everything, that they're working on our side. And, you know, when we begin to discover that they're not, that they are not there for us, which is what, you know, what happened, I mean, what happened in the fracking community, suddenly white people were going, where's the law? Where's the government? I remember one individual whose water was absolutely contaminated by a neighbor's fracking and used to call the Pennsylvania, this happened in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, used to call them every day after they failed to deliver on a promise to address the situation. This family was living on water buffalo, you know, carried in water for years, and then the company said, well, we're done, you know, kind of being accountable in this minor manner, and now you have to pay for your water buffalo. And this guy was calling the government, you know, the appropriate government office every single day. And they basically went after him for being a public nuisance, for making a phone call to an unresponsive government regulatory official. And so this was the word that, oh my God, they're not protecting us. They're not protecting the white people. And of course, that was not a wealthy region. Westchester is a wealthy region where this AIM pipeline is going through. This was a poor, rural, blue-collar white region. But that's where, you know, the memo, you know, many people who were protecting New York from fracking and part of the greater Pennsylvania New York coalition were getting the wake-up call. The government has abdicated. They are not interested in protecting us. And so suddenly the protector that we kind of thought was on our side is no more. And now, and that has been the struggle is for the new engagement and empowerment where we have to protect ourselves and yet are disabled by the belief that we can't. We don't know the tools. We don't have the fortitude. We don't have the belief systems because we've been promised that it will all come to us as individuals, cycling back to the first theme of our program here that we've been discussing, you know, to become involved, you know. And so that is what it looks like on the white side of the fence. And so what we're seeing in the brown communities, the Native communities, is actually people who know oppression and yet who feel empowered and are acting as leaders out of that empowerment.
Right, and the thing that's interesting to catch on that, too, is that when you look, so to maybe intro this, the concept that's really been hitting me hard about the pipelines that are affecting Native communities right now, when you go and spend some time, so I grew up in Woodstock, New York. It's a progressive, quote-unquote, you know, a lot of hippies, people think they're totally hip and far out and that they're you know, they're conscientious and that they're progressive and that they're awesome. And it's like, you know, you have this thing, and we live in these mountains, it's beautiful, but we don't live near any reservations. I grew up personally with a shot, like I had a combination of like, I saw what happened to the community when the natives came through in the 70s and everybody glorified and deified them, right? It was an exoticizing that happened and people wanted to be them and people wanted to get sage and they wanted a drum and they wanted buckskin and all the, you know, and I was like nine going, you guys are all crazy. They're amazing people. That's awesome. But like, you look like a bunch of idiots. Like, that's how I felt as a nine-year-old, right? And so, and then I grew up with a little celebrity in my family. And when you stand online and you watch the people waiting to get backstage, that's a turnoff too, right? And so, and then you take, I have Native blood, from what I understand, on all sides, both sides of my family. My father, my great-grandfather was Blackfoot. My great-grandmother was Shinnecock. And and then my mother had has Arapaho very deep in the family. It's a secret that no one wanted to talk about, you know. So that's like a, that's an uncomfortable place, right? So I'm kind of like, well, okay. So I have this Native blood. I was raised in Woodstock. I sold the New Age to the community from the other side of the metaphysical bookstore, health food store counter. I how I grew up, I you know, I spent my 20s in a Tibetan monastery. So like, I did my, you know, I'd done my exploring, I've been working to you know, to better and grow myself in the global community for since I was a kid. But but I never dove in to the sweat lodge I've done sweats, right? But I've never been like, I'm going to go find my heritage. I'm going to connect the dots in my blood. No, I'm just going to live my life, and I do what I do. And yes, I have some Native blood in there. So, so as I'm looking at all this and I'm going, oh, you know, what do I do with this Native blood? What's happening? I was like, no, whatever, you do what you do. In the meantime, as we look at what's happening here, on the East Coast, we have, on both coasts, we have storage and transport hubs. It's coming down the center. And the Native people, again, we're looking at the whole, like, energetic. My head always goes back to the bigger sort of picture, quote unquote, the spiritual or the esoteric of it all. And I'm going, wow, Dakota Access, this one over there, that. What are we looking at right now? The Natives have come together. They know power. And power doesn't come from, you know, from the big government. Doesn't dole it out. And so as we're looking to that, as people, as you notice white people going, well, you're supposed to take care of us. Those, you know, there's, if you live near a Native community, do you know what those people, the white people around Native communities have been colonized to think? That Natives are just welfare handout recipients. Because we, as our government says, well, we're going to take care of you. You sit down, shut up. No, you can't grow in this nasty soil we gave you. Oh, wait, you can. We're trying to put you in where you couldn't actually grow anything, and you're growing better than we are. Wait, okay, we're going to mine uranium, and then you definitely can't grow food there. And you have to call on us, and you're going to have to eat all this white flour, dole, this food we're giving you. We're going to run how you handle your reservations. Yes, you guys are sovereign. We're going to make sure it's like this attempt to make sure that, and you cannot colonize these people. You can take their land. You can take their food. You can take everything. And I think it's in all of us who, when we reach back to the core center of who we are, where our heart space is, where our energy, where we are connected to all that is and each other, we are power. And we don't need we're turning to go, hey, you have to help us because we've been trained to do that. But you sick dogs on people who are protecting their land and their community, and they've been doing it for centuries. What are you going to get? You're going to figure out that they don't care about your freaking dogs. Put your dogs back in the car. We are not accepting this. And more people are coming together to recognize that we have to move in prayer. Because that system that is there to oppress says, oh, you just need to disconnect from prayer and creativity. You need to, we're going to put your kids in school. We're going to strip them of, well, strip the Native kids of any tradition. But the rest of you don't have it. You think Jesus is going to save your ass. So here, let's go to school. We're going to make sure you have no education about how to be truly creative. We're going to strip that from you because that's where your power lies. So instead, you go get a job and you drive in your car on the little straight road and you go home to your little flat-walled house and you feel happy that you actually made it home in time to watch that crappy TV show because this is your life. People and so the great call of this coming together of these traditions, the welcoming of allies, and it's all energetically reminding us that we have to hold our power, and that lies in creativity and prayer. And so we must re-indigenize ourselves, and we're all indigenous to the where we were born. Right? Like I was born in Kingston. Like, that's my indigenous roots. They're here. They're down the road, 10 miles away. Woodstock, this is my home. You know what I mean? Like, I am indigenous to this community. And so what's happening is this really fascinating thing, because most people only look at their own backyard. Like me, like I was horrified. I'm like, really, Rach? the first time you're going to carry a picket sign is because it's down the street and you love that lake and that's a special lake. No, mm-hmm. You're going to look, you're going to take this opportunity to look at the bigger picture. So look out, global, local, mm-hmm. local, global, local, global, local, global. So I was very clear that that had to be a position I took. But what's happening now is that everyone's looking at Standing Rock. And then, and especially when you get there, people are going, mm-hmm. oh, wait a minute, this is happening in my neighborhood? This is pointing people back to look in their neighborhood and get NIMBY about it, too. Because
that's amazing. Yeah. You know, I want to just say, Rachel, we have got like about, two more minutes of the show or so to kind of wrap up.
I'm looking at the wrong time.
Yeah. This is the most, you know, you came from your local community, you connected with that. We've connected all of what has been segmented, you know, at least in the poetic understanding and deep conviction that you're sharing with us today. And now it also cycles back to all of us where we are, this wisdom from Standing Rock, about serving within our own place. And we have to, because, you know, it's happening everywhere. It's happening everywhere.
And it is all connected.
It is. And it's a big front line.
It's a big front line, and I just want to tie in the last little quick thing to remind you, because I know you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so after Enbridge, did we discuss, did I mention that Enbridge, after Spectra spent all of Labor Day weekend blasting to get under the Hudson River?
Mm-hmm.
Monday morning, Enbridge, who was Sandpiper, now owns a stake in the Dakota Access Pipeline, announced that they will be now messing with, they usually only mess with crude. Now, they are going to consume Spectra to form the largest fossil fuel corporation in the Northern Hemisphere.
We're going to have her back on the show. Quickly, Rachel, how can people clue into what you're about, find you, get involved? Like, what can people do?
RachelMarcoHavens.com. You can go and poke and get a little idea and check out the Earth Guardians.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right.
And you can find
Thank
me on
you.
Facebook.
Perfect. Rachel Marco Havens. Thank you so much, Rachel. This has been an extraordinary conversation. I've loved it. We are going to have you back, soon, actually, because this is happening right now.
We didn't even talk about Standing Rock. We didn't even
talk about
Standing
Rock. I know. Well, we'll do another show on Standing Rock. We'll do another show.
Thank you.
I think the prelude and roots are very important for people in understanding Standing Rock. So we're going to have you on very soon, within the month.
Okay.
And so thank you. And thank you, listeners, for being with us today on Connect the Dots as we did some major dot connecting today. If you like this show, please share it on iTunes, post it via social media, and come back and be with us for another edition of Connect the Dots next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Be well.
And there was night, and there was dark, and there was light. There was pink, but there was the sky. And there is the tree that crawled alive. Sambele uma luere, mambele uma luere, uma luere, uma luere, uma luere, uma luere. There was a sword.
around the world.